A murky morning for the jobs market.
Fewer jobs added, more subtracted. From APM, American Public Media in New York, hello, I'm David Brancaccio.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. It's the Marketplace Midday Update, our podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Thursday, May 31st.
Coming up, why short sales could be the key to the housing recovery.
And what's in a name? Just ask corn syrup.
You'll hear all about it on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
The U.S. economy added about 133,000 private sector jobs in May. That's according to a report from ADP Data Processing. That was fewer jobs than expected. At the same time, the number of workers filing for unemployment benefits rose last week to a five-week high. Joining us now to talk about this is Diane Swonk, chief economist with Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning.
Diane, what do you make of the jobs news out this morning?
Well, certainly it's tepid jobs data, and it really has to be taken into context. We've already seen much of the payback to unusually mild winter weather in the months of March and April, and that helped to suppress those monthly numbers. The May data, looking much weaker than expected, is really more fundamental weakness in the U.S. economy. We're seeing the manufacturing sector start to slow down after it had been really a shining star in the U.S. economy for much of the last 6 months.
Are we starting to see the job situation plateauing? It had been improving.
Well, we actually have seen the job situation after it improved in the beginning of the year. The jobless claims have begun to come down. Now they've plateaued at minimum at a higher level than people would like. And the most recent week, of course, popped up. Now, there was a holiday in that most recent week. But even with that, and that could mess up the numbers, we've seen a lot of upward revisions as we've gone back and looked at the data and adjusted it. So it suggests the trend is in the wrong direction as we move into summer and we continue to worry about the weakness in Europe spilling over to the U.S.
We also got news this morning that GDP, a measure of economic growth, was revised downward for the first part of this year. How significant is that?
Well, the most significant part of that report was the flip-flop in the reporting of state and local government spending. We'd actually seen the state and local government sector, the lion's share of government spending, increase initially in the GDP report. Now it's actually declining, and that sort of throws some cold water on the thought that many state and local governments had already bit the bullet and done the hard cutting they needed to do last year, and raises concerns that the state and local government sector will not be an impetus to growth this year, could be yet another stumbling block, and frankly, we've got enough already.
Diane Swonk with Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Now to Spain, where a big bank may need a big bailout. Greece's future within the euro could be determined in a general election in the coming weeks, and voters in Ireland expressed their views on debt and austerity today. Experts say the European debt crisis could derail halting economic growth in the United States, but do Americans really care? Let's get an attitude check.
And the latest poll number suggests margin of error.
There is somewhat of a disconnect.
It's conventional wisdom.
Our survey said.
It's our weekly partnership with Gallup. Let's bring in the polling firm's editor-in-chief, Frank Newport. Good morning, Frank.
Hi, good morning.
What do you find? Are Americans actually following what's going on with this unfolding two-year-old European debt crisis?
Not all that closely, and that's an important finding. It's screaming headlines this morning that dominate marketplace and coverage, all our coverage. But we asked Americans just a night or two ago, how closely are you following news of the euro currency and the financial situation in the European countries? And our number is 49% following it very or somewhat closely. We've asked that same scale of over 200 news events over the last decade. 60 is the average, so this 49 is below average. David, about the same attention that was being paid to the Keystone XL pipeline controversy in March of this year. So it's just not a highly salient issue at this moment.
That's very interesting. And I think the media should shoulder some of the blame for failing to make the connections between what's going on supposedly over there and our ability to draw money from our own bank accounts if this crisis ever escalates. Of the Americans who are following this, are they concerned?
Well, we don't find a huge level of concern, and we did put it in some context. You know, we said, how concerned are you? And the way we phrased it was, David, how concerned are you about the impact of the euro crisis on the U.S. economy? And only 31% of Americans 2 nights ago said they were very concerned. Now, a little earlier this year, we asked that same question about some other international events, and we had 73% who were worried about the debt of the U.S. being held by other countries, and 57% who were worried about the impact of what was happening in Iran. That price of gas, of course, involved there on the U.S. economy. So even in the context of other international events, the average American simply doesn't see, it looks like to us at this point, a real connection between what's happening in Europe and the U.S. economy.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at Gallup, thank you very much for this.
My pleasure.
Another big vote in Europe today on the issue of austerity. In recent elections in Greece and France, voters showed a lack of support for the deep spending cuts tied to bailout loans from the European Union. Now Ireland is holding a referendum on whether to ratify Europe's new fiscal discipline pact. Joining us from the streets of Cork on the southern tip of Ireland is Marketplace's Stephen Beard. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Stacey.
Stephen, how much is at stake in today's vote?
Not as much as with next month's rerun of the Greek election. But what the Irish are voting on today is whether or not to accept the new fiscal discipline treaty. If they vote no today, that won't lead to default, certainly not in the short term, but it would be a vote against austerity and further undermine a key tactic for dealing with the debt crisis.
Do we have a sense of how the Irish are going to vote?
I think the majority are likely to back it. I've just been walking around Cork and it's absolutely bristling with posters and billboards saying things like vote yes for stability, yes for investment, yes to secure Ireland's future. But, you know, the Irish have a habit of voting no. They initially rejected two European Union treaties in previous referendums, and there's no doubt that the Irish are heartily sick of austerity.
So, Stephen, Ireland got its own bailout of about $100 billion. What happens if voters reject the fiscal discipline treaty?
Well, as I say, it won't endanger the bailout. It won't lead to an immediate default. In fact, the fiscal discipline treaty would go ahead without the Irish, but it could have wider repercussions. It would strengthen the hand of the new French president, who says Europe needs to put more emphasis on growth, and it would put more pressure on the Germans to soften their hard line on austerity. But it would be a further sign of rebellion and disarray in the Eurozone, not what the global economy needs right now.
There's a report today from RealtyTrack on pre-foreclosure sales and their role in the housing market here. Banks are now warming to the idea of short sales that forgive part of a mortgage balance up front, but critics say banks need more incentives to help struggling homeowners. Here's Marketplace's Bob Moon.
Early in the housing meltdown, lenders fiercely resisted allowing homes to be sold at a big loss, so Guy Sakala, who publishes Inside Mortgage Finance, says banks often rejected short sale requests.
There was a lot of suspicion with short sale that it was borrowers trying to game the system or trying to get out of a home where they could afford the mortgage, and they often disagreed with the prices that were coming in. They thought they were too low.
But now lenders have plenty of depressed home prices to compare with the short sale offers, and they've learned repossessing homes through foreclosure can cost them even more. So Sakala says they're much more receptive to short sales. Homeowners complain it can still take 6 months or longer in many cases to get an answer. San Diego real estate agent Jim Abbott says the bank handling the property is often just a middleman for the actual lender.
They get paid either way, so there isn't necessarily a big incentive short of federal regulation to make them process these things faster.
New provisions require companies servicing Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac mortgages to make short sale decisions within 30 days. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Today, housing advocacy groups from 17 states are launching a campaign to force presidential candidates to address foreclosures. From WYPR in Baltimore, Mary Rose Madden reports.
What's it going to take to make foreclosures the top issue in this presidential election?
Hi, good afternoon. How are you today?
A lot of phone time.
Okay. Did you
LeVar Michael is talking to one of 20,000 homeowners on this local group's phone list.
Okay.
Phone calls, door-to-door canvassing, rallies, meetings, it's all part of the on-the-ground effort to organize homeowners facing foreclosure.
There's a lot of people who are struggling to stay in their homes. Sometimes people feel isolated. We just are here to help, and we're here to reach out to them and to provide any assistance we can.
Michael is a member of the new Home Defenders League. It says federal programs offer no enforcement, and federal task forces have not done nearly enough to address this crisis.
We're not going to give our votes away for free. We expect to see something substantive occur in order to vote those people back in office.
So the Home Defenders League is trying to organize a mass movement to convince homeowners to fight the banks while urging the presidential candidates to stand up for these voters. In Baltimore, I'm Mary Rose Madden for Marketplace.
So, David, apparently resting in peace is very last year. Did you know this?
Resting in peace.
Yes. A new service will keep your Facebook page alive after you pass on. Things like sending messages to friends and family, birthday greetings, things like that. It's called Dead Social, and it's still in beta testing, although thousands of people have signed up. And when asked about his service by Forbes, owner James Norris said, "Why should we stop creating content when we pass on?"
And there's absolutely nothing creepy about that whatsoever.
We can keep filing Marketplace stories forever.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
Crude oil is still under $88 a barrel earlier this morning, the lowest since October. Struggling Europe and slower growth in India and China mean less demand and more supply. From the Marketplace Sustainability Desk, Scott Tong reports.
For decades, 88 bucks a barrel had oil companies seeing giant dollar signs. They could drill, refine, and sell it for a hefty profit. Now, costs a whole lot more to produce. With conventional oil fields depleting, companies now go under the ocean, or mine it on land and cook it, or melt it to the surface. So $80 now can be the break-even price in places like Alberta or North Dakota. So when prices tumble, here's Deborah Gordon of the Carnegie Endowment's Energy Program.
If there's not enough demand, then you can keep it in the ground a little longer and turn it back on when the price, fluctuates.
Most analysts think this is a short-term dip, but that's what many said in the early 80s, when oil prices cratered and stayed in the valley.
Those kinds of time frames, decade at a time, that's when projects start turning off. That's when you start seeing companies sell off or turn off. It's just not economically viable.
Assuming prices rise again, big oil would cheer, but not too loud. If crude stays high for too long, consumers start to buy alternatives for good. In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We reported that General Motors said recently it's scrapping its ad on the Super Bowl because the company doesn't think those ads are worth the money. Now the automaker is embracing the other football, or real football, depending on your point of view. Today, GM and its Chevy brand signed a big sponsorship deal with the popular English soccer team Manchester United. Christopher Wirth has more from London.
For the next 5 years, Chevrolet's iconic bow tie insignia will be displayed all over Manchester United Stadium, signs, and as a backdrop during player interviews. Alan Switzer follows sports financing at Deloitte. He says it's not just European fans that Chevy and GM want to appeal to.
Manchester United claim to have over 600 million fans worldwide, so clearly General Motors are looking sort of to tap into that huge fan base.
The team is wildly popular in Asia, a market where GM is growing fast. And soccer fans tend to be loyal to companies that advertise with their favorite teams. Alex Finn advises soccer teams on media and marketing. He says similar deals have helped boost GM's European division, Opel, when it sponsored a popular German soccer team.
So to be associated with such an important soccer team is a halo effect that many advertisers seek.
For its part, Manchester United hopes the deal will help it attract more fans in the United States. In London, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
For the past week and a half, Mark Zuckerberg has been losing face a bit on the stock market, but this week his company is moving ahead with plans for a major expansion into its headquarters in the Silicon Valley suburb of Menlo Park.
On Tuesday, the Menlo Park City Council voted unanimously to approve the expansion in exchange for $8.5 million from the company. For our midday extra, the mayor of Menlo Park, Kirsten Keith, joins us now to talk about the proposal. Good morning, Mayor Keith.
Good morning. It's good to be here. Thank you.
Now, Menlo Park welcomed Facebook a year ago. How has Facebook changed Menlo Park?
Well, I think that now every time you hear the word Facebook, you hear Menlo Park. Headquarters are
it's
in
true,
Menlo Park.
Right.
And it's really put Menlo Park on the map. And we're very happy to have them as our new neighbors here in Menlo Park.
You know, economists like to talk about the multiplier effect when you have a big employer in a town like that. Do you actually see it? I mean, is it just essentially the $8.5 million, or does the wealth percolate into the community in different ways?
It really does, and they've been terrific neighbors. I mean, the wealth that will percolate down to the community is evident, but right now they've already been giving grants to some of our nonprofits in the community in San Mateo County, such as HART, the Housing Endowment and Regional Trust, for housing purposes. And they've hired people from Job Train, which is here in Menlo Park, and it trains people to get jobs, which is what we need. So they've been very good community neighbors so far. They've really reached out to the Bellhaven community east of 101 and been involved with the schools. I mean, Mark Zuckerberg spoke at Beechwood School last year at their graduation ceremony. So, and I could go on and on with the things that they've done.
Well, speaking of neighbors, from what I understand, there have been worries about excess traffic and expansion, and with the neighboring city, Atherton, has apparently threatened a lawsuit. What do you say to some of those concerns?
You know, we have done an environmental impact review, and through that report, we found that there was a peak in traffic in the PM time, for the 4 to 6, and Facebook is already contributing 30% to fix that intersection, to make changes to it. And we feel that we have made it very compliant and very safe, and that the changes that we want to offer, that we have offered to Atherton, make sense. And Atherton actually approved the same sort of changes for this intersection through two previous environmental impact reports. So it's curious why now there's a difference.
Now, it has not been the most fabulous 2 weeks for our friends at Facebook. How's the community reacted to the way that the initial public offering went?
Well, I think it's, you know, I don't work at Facebook. I don't have Facebook stock. I think it's a disappointment for them the way that it was handled on the NASDAQ. But, they're going to have to figure that out. It's not for me to comment on their stock.
Mayor Keith, do you actually have a Facebook page, a profile up on that?
I have a Facebook page, yes. In fact, I have two.
Two? You have like the mayor one and the personal one?
No, I'm running for San Mateo County Board of Supervisors. So I have a supervisor page up, and then I have a personal Facebook page, which I've had for a number of years.
Kirsten Keith is the mayor of Menlo Park. Mayor Keith, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you.
The Food and Drug Administration has rejected a bid to rename high fructose corn syrup. Corn refiners wanted to call the sweetener corn sugar on nutrition labels. Marketplace's Amy Scott has that story.
Corn refiners have been fighting the perception that high fructose corn syrup is unnatural or worse for you than sugar. You may have seen ads like this on TV.
Whether it's corn sugar or cane sugar, your body can't tell the difference. Sugar is sugar.
But according to the FDA, sugar is a solid food. Corn syrup is a liquid. Marion Nessel teaches nutrition at New York University. She says the FDA was right to stay out of what's essentially a marketing dispute between the corn and sugar industries.
There really isn't any difference biochemically. So in that sense, the corn refiners have the science on their side, but they don't have public opinion on their side.
Sugar is fighting its own PR battle. New York City just announced a proposed ban on large drinks sweetened with sugar or corn syrup. Brand strategist Jonathan Salem Baskin says the name isn't the problem.
What corn syrup has as a challenge is the same thing that the sugar folks have as a challenge, which is the stuff isn't particularly good for you.
Nutritionists say we'd all be better off eating less of both. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
And finally, if you don't like your bank, vote with your feet and do business somewhere else. It is the magic of the market at work. But moving accounts could cost you. Consumers Union sent secret shoppers into the 10 largest banks and found that closing a bank account can cost as much as $55. There are fees for transferring remaining funds if you go that route. Some banks have $25 penalties for closing an account that's been open less than 6 months. And here's a good one, Stacey. Some closed accounts come back from the dead if the bank later receives a deposit by mistake.
Why stop charging fees just because you've closed your bank account?
In New York, I'm David Brancaccio.
And I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
on APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.